Proudly presented by Paul Everett's RV Country. This is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
You recognize the instrument, but do you know who is picking those strings on the banjo? That is none other than our guest today, Lou Guernsey of Ionia, Michigan. When did you start playing the banjo, Lou?
When I was 48 years old.
Uh-huh. So you've only been playing it.
I went to church one day, and there was two guys in church. Two of my friends were playing banjo. I didn't even know they played banjos. They had such a good time up there in the church playing the banjo. I told my wife while they were doing it, I said, I'm going to do that. So I ended up 3 months later, I was up there playing with them. So I had a lot of fun.
Well, we're going to go back to a time that maybe wasn't quite so carefree for you during World War II. You're a young airman on a B-26 crew with the 394th Bomb Group, the 586th Bomb Squadron. March of 1945 is rolling around. You guys have been bombing targets in Germany. And do I have this right? You find out you're going to have a different pilot or a co-pilot that day?
Well, they would take the first pilots of new crews and have them fly a mission or two with crews that were experienced.
Mm-hmm.
So they would fly as a co-pilot, and they could see what was going on. And then when they had their own crew, they would be acclimated a little bit. So this Robert Turner, he was a pilot for the first pilot on another crew. So he was going to fly with us. We were one of the experienced, probably had 30 missions in or better. I mean, and so we were experienced, and he was going to fly with us. And this was his first mission. He got killed. It's bad, but he did. And the thing that hurt, when his father heard that he was killed, he went down to the basement and hung it up.
Mm.
Now, can you imagine that mother and that wife losing both a son and a husband?
Horrible.
But that was bad on that man's part, because he lost his son, that he'd go hang it up, but he did.
Oh, war is an ugly thing. And, tragedies are left and right. What do you remember about that day? And I guess the plane you were in was called Sheboygan Redskin?
Yeah, the Sheboygan Redskin. Well, that was the first airplane that we flew a mission in.
Uh-huh.
Then after that, we got our own airplane. It was called Who Cares? And it had a big question mark on the side, and there was a hillbilly sitting on a stump with a jug of Mountain Dew and a muzzle-loading rifle. And he's sitting on the side of that, and that was our airplane. Well, our aircraft that day was in getting a 50-hour checkover, and so we went back in the Sheboygan Redskin. And while I was flying in it, I was looking. There was a hole down there in that that had been passed. And about, say, 6 or 8 missions before that, the tail gunner in that aircraft was sitting there, and a piece of flak went up through there and went through his eye and killed him.
Mm.
Went right through his eye and up into his brain. And it was, I don't know, I'd sit there and look at that hole, and I hope it didn't happen to me.
Yeah, you're sitting in the very same spot that he had been sitting in.
But we used to go look at the bulletin board in there and to find out if he's going to fly. And when the guys would say, well, I live another day, I don't have to fly tomorrow. But when the Battle of the Bulge came on, that was bad. We was flying 2 missions a day up there helping the guys in the Battle of the Bulge.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I got shot down that day, too.
Well, maybe we should hear that story before we get to when you were shot
down.
Well,
no, we had intense accurate flak that day,
mm-hmm.
and it was bad. And there was thousands of airplanes in the sky. It was, I never seen anything like it. You know, they were dropping paratroopers over there and supplies and parachutes, and there was C-47s flying, and then there was B-26s. There was B-17s up above us. And they shot down 2 of those while I was sat there. I seen 2 of those go down. Just as we turned on evasive action, two 88s went off right where our aircraft would have been.
Oh, man.
If we hadn't turned. And that was close.
I could see that getting your attention a little bit.
Oh, yeah. And then when I got back, the hub on our right engine was kind of off-center. So I went over and I looked in the engine nacelle, and I picked out a piece of an 88 shell that weighed about a half a pound. And I had that as a souvenir, but when I got shot down, somebody took it. I don't know where it went.
Well, and I'm glad that you bring that up with that engine being damaged, because a lot of times when we talk to guys who are on bomber crews on this program, they were on a B-17 or a B-24, planes that had four engines. You didn't have that luxury. If you lose an engine, that's half your ability to stay in the air right there.
Well, they would fly on one engine, but it took a good pilot to fly it on one engine. Mm-hmm. And Arnold, who died on the way to the hospital, German hospital, he was a good pilot. And he's buried in Ohio now, down in Columbus, Ohio. I found out where he's buried. A while back, I got a email from a guy in Holland, the old country over there. He wanted to know about that mission. So I told him about it, wrote him an email. They had adopted Turner. According to him, they haven't found Turner, who flew his co-pilot for us that day. But he was buried right next to the aircraft, the way I understand. Our regular co-pilot went up there that day to see what happened, and he found the wreckage, but the Germans had buried the airplane in the ground.
Wow.
Now, why they did that, I don't know, but the airplane was buried right out in this farmer's field.
Huh.
They were doing some funny things, I guess, toward the end of the war.
Well, you survived those bomb runs during the Battle of the Bulge, which I'm sure that's the last kind of situation where you'd want to be ditching an airplane, is in that kind of wintry mess.
Well, at the Battle of the Bulge, everybody wanted to fly and get up there and help those guys.
Oh, I bet.
We all knew that.
Mm-hmm.
What was going on up there, you know? The weather was so bad we couldn't fly. But boy, when that broke, everybody wanted to go. Well, on the 22nd of March, we were told to bomb Haltern, Germany, right on the outskirts. Every town in Germany was built on a four corners, it seemed like, and there was these two main roads up there. So we were to bomb that intersection and also into the town. It's a fortified town. Well, we went in, dropped bombs, and we just dropped the bombs, and the bomb bay doors closed. And all of a sudden, I was looking at the airplane next to us, and our airplane shook, and the one next to us, the tail guns got shot right out of that gun, that airplane. They made a whip, and they went down, and I thought, boy, them guys are going down, and then over the intercom come bailout men. When you're in the crew and somebody says something like bailout men, you bail out. You don't say why. You don't say, well, I wonder what happened. You got out, because I had seen so many airplanes explode in the air, you know, and nobody get out of them.
Mm-hmm.
That my first thought was, man, I'm going to get out of this thing. It's a flying bomb, you know? So I backed off my seat and took my, we had a little suit that we, a vest-like thing we had on. It was called a flak vest, and I took that off. I got my parachute and snapped it on and went over to the waist window, and my gunner there, he pointed out, so I went out. I was the first one out of the airplane. And I come down, and I was coming down in that parachute. I'm coming down right on the edge of the town we just bombed. Now, if that don't raise the hair on the back of your neck, I'll be surprised, because we did this, and it was about 50 or 60 fires down there.
And you were the ones responsible for it.
Yeah, we did it, you know. And I'm coming down, and the closer I get to the ground, I'm about 200, maybe 250 feet off the ground. I look down, and here's a German soldier with a rifle pointed at me. And I, oh, that's what I need. Well, I took my hands off the shroud lines and showed him I didn't have nothing. He put his rifle down, and I grabbed the shroud lines, and by then I hit the ground. And I thought they'd shot me because my back hurt. I hit backwards. I was swinging pretty heavy. And well, I jumped up, took my parachute off, and I looked up, and here come four or five German soldiers running toward me. Well, I just stood there. I don't know what happened to me. I'm not a brave man. I wouldn't put my hands up. I said to myself, I'm an American soldier, and I'm a sergeant in the United States Army. I'm not going to put my hand up, and I'm not going to say comrade. I just stood there. Well, this German sergeant come up to me, and he unzipped my jacket, and he reached in there, and I had a holster 45 pistol in there, and he took that, and he says, I'll take this. And he says, empty your pockets. And he could talk a little English, or good enough English to tell me that. So I had this picture of Anna Lee, and I give him that. I give him my escape kits, and I had two more clips of ammunition for that 45. Now, why I carried it, I don't know, but I did. I give him that. I had a package of Camel cigarettes in my pocket that I hadn't opened. I always flew with a new package of cigarettes and some matches. I had a jackknife in my pocket, and they took that. They give me the cigarettes back, and they give me my matches back. And that picture of my wife, Anna Lee, because she was my girlfriend then.
Right.
Then they patted me down to make sure I didn't have a pistol hit on me or something. Then they said, come this way, get your parachute. So I picked the parachute up, and we walked off. Well, I went over, maybe went about a mile. And these guys were cleaning ammunition and putting it in machine gun belts. And they says, are you hurt? And I said, well, my back hurts. And they said, well, we got a doctor coming. I said, oh, that's not necessary. Well, he's coming. So up drove a car, and out come a German doctor. And he was a German officer of some kind. I don't know what his rank was. And he asked me if I was hurt, and I told him my back hurt. And he said, well, there's nothing we can do about that. And he said, how bad was Chicago bombed? I said, no, Chicago hasn't been bombed. Well, he says, I was a doctor in Chicago for 8 years.
Wow.
I had a very good practice buildup. And he says, I went home to the old country to see my parents, and they constructed me in the Army. And he says, here I am. So we talked for a little while about different things, nothing military, just, and he was a nice guy. I wish I'd have got his name. And he asked me, he says, are you hungry? And I said, yes. So he spoke to one of these Germans, and he went away, and then he asked me if I wanted some beer. And I said, well, I'm kind of thirsty. So they poured some beer out of a pitcher they had there. And he says, here. And he gave me that. I says, I thought, I tasted it was horrible. I said, I thought you Germans made good beer. I said, this is not good. And he says, no. He said, that's enlisted man's beer. He says, I'll get you some good beer. So he said something to another guy, and he went. And pretty soon this guy come back with sandwiches, and the doctor said, well, I've got to go now. He says, don't try to escape. Do what they tell you. And he says, you'll be all right. But if you try to escape, he says, they'll shoot you. He says, do as they tell you. He says, you'll be okay. For you, he says, the war's all over. He says, just be mindful of that. So I was. Well, anyway, this guy come up with these sandwiches, two sandwiches. Then this another guy come up, and he handed me this big old bottle of beer. So I opened that beer up, and I drank it, and it tasted so good. I was thirsty, and I'm telling you, I was scared. When I come down in that parachute, I was terrified. It was, I knew I'd heard some bad stories about what they did to airmen.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, I drank this beer, eat them sandwiches, and then it hit me. And I thought, they put something in that beer, so I would start talking to them. So there was a little tree right there, and it was kind of a warm day that day. So I sat down on the ground, put my back to that tree, and I actually went to sleep. Too much beer, I'll tell you. I'm not a beer drinker. I don't drink, you know. But anyway, that beer was awful strong. Then I woke, I heard the awfulest explosion, so it woke me up, and I was in this anti-aircraft outfit, and they were shooting it at some B-26s going over, and it was bad. They were putting them shells right in there, you know, and these guys were good. Of course, they'd been shooting at airplanes for 5 or 6 years, you know, and they knew what they were doing.
They were experienced, and you knew, having been on a B-26 crew, that you guys would often bomb places just like that before you'd bomb your target, so you'd have a chance of getting through.
We'd send three airplanes ahead, and they would bomb known anti-aircraft positions. Then I thought to myself, man, I hope they don't bomb this one until I get out of here. Well, anyway, they come, got me in a car, and took me around. We went by a pasture field, probably about 10 or 15 acres. And there was a beautiful herd of cattle in it. And some of them were standing there with their insides hanging out. Some with broken legs. Some were on the ground. And there was people there butchering them. And the guy in the car, he says to me, he says, you did that. You did that. And yeah, we did do it. You know, kill them beautiful cows. Then they took me to for interrogation. He wanted to know how many missions I'd flew, and I told him it was my first one. And he asked me that about three times, and I tell him that's my first mission. Well, he walked over, and he unzipped my jacket, and he says, now your jacket, there's your serial number. You got a new jacket when you come over here. And he says, look at this jacket. It's all tore. He's got the little spots on it, three-cornered tears. Because you walk through an airplane, there's always something catching. And he says, it's greasy, it's dirty. And he says, you flew more than one mission. I said, no, one mission. I wouldn't tell him any difference. The heck with him.
Even though you'd flown 32.
Yeah, I wasn't going to tell him.
Right.
He drew two airplanes, and he put a cable between them, kind of back at a V. And he drew a box at the apex of that V, and he says, now, what was that they were towing? I says, I don't know what it is. He says, you're an American sergeant? He says, you're not stupid. He says, what was that? I says, I don't know what it was. He says, yes, you do. Well, I says, if you really want to know, and boy, he looked right at me, he hunched right up and got over that picture. I said, this tail gunner over here did his washing. He had it out there to dry. I shouldn't have done it. I should not have done that. He jumped up. His face got red, and he pointed at a window. He says, you see that window? And I says, yes. He said, he was screaming this. Now, he's not, he is mad. He says, I'll take you out there and shoot you. You think I can't shoot you? He says, I can call these men and they will take you out there and shoot you. I can shoot you anytime I want to shoot you. Nobody will know the difference, but I'll take you out there and shoot you. Man, I thought to myself, well, you idiot, you've stuck your mouth, your foot in your mouth this time. You've got to shut up to these Germans. Don't try to get them. No sense of humor. Well, I cooled him down a little bit, but and then I got out of there. Man, I tell you, I thought I'd had it. We went to a barn, big horse barn. It was all cleaned out nice, and straw all over, picnic tables in the middle, and they put me in the corner of this horse barn, and it was cold. They'd taken my flying suit and stuff. All I had was a jacket and pants. I laid there, and somebody threw a greatcoat over me. Now, them Germans had them big overcoats. And they'd throwed one of them over me, and boy, that felt good. Well, that was an act of kindness. That was the second act. The first act is when I got that beer and them sandwiches. This was the second act. Then in the morning when I woke up, there was a young soldier sitting on one of them picnic tables. He called me down, give me a slice of bread. He reached in a knapsack, and he took out a can of strawberries jam, and he had, maybe about 2 inches of it left. And he put some on the bread, and he handed it to me, and he let me know that his mother had made him that jam, and he'd give me some. Well, I felt kind of privileged eating that, you know. That was the last act of kindness I got till I got to prison camp. They were going to take me away in a car. And, geez, some sergeant walked up, and he pulled a P-38 pistol. He stuck it in my, about 10 inches from my belly and started calling me every name he could lay his tongue to. S-O-B, murderer, baby killer. And I kept smiling at him. I didn't know what to do. I thought, that's fool, he could shoot me, you know, but I smiled at him. Pretty soon he quit, and he put his pistol, and he started to walk away, and I thought, now I got to get you somehow. So I reached out to shake hands with him, and he started to shake hands with me, and then he realized what he was doing, and he threw my hand down, and I says, yeah, I gotcha. It made me feel good. Boy, that really ticked him off, and he walked away. I don't know. I had a ring also that my granddad had given me. It was a gold ring and had a big set in it. It was aquamarine. It was a beautiful ring. They hadn't taken it yet, so I put it on my dog tag chain, and they looked at my dog tags. They'd always look at the top one, and I put this on the bottom one, and I give that ring back to my granddad when the war was over. Boy, was he happy. But the Germans never seen it, and that made me feel good that I put that over on them, too. We went to the prison camp, and the Russians liberated it. Once you got to the prison camp, they left you pretty much alone. You had to stand count every morning. There they might have an emergency count, and you always had to have your dog tag in your pocket. You had the Germans give you a dog tag, and my dog tag number was 8126, and every prisoner there was known as Kriegi. I had a strange thing happen to me. I was in Lansing one day, and I've got a license plate that says Kriegi. That's my license plate on my van. The one on my truck says I was an ex-POW, but a lady walked up to me and she says, was you in the war? And I says, yes. She says, was you in prison camp? Yes. Well, her dad, no, her granddad was in Stalag Lift 1.
Huh.
And he'd been in there about a year and a half. He had an attack of appendicitis, and they operated on him with a razor blade without any antiseptic of any kind, no beer, no nothing. The guys held him down. They cut him open, took his appendix out, and sewed him back up because they was talking about scars one day, and he says, "You people haven't seen a scar in his family, you know." And he said, "Look at this." And they showed him that. But can you imagine that?
He'd have died
if he hadn't have done that. But yeah. To hold a guy down and take his appendix out without anything. But now, well, I'm getting off my story.
Well, I'm glad you got there, though, because if there's one thing that stands out to me from all the prisoners of war that I've interviewed, I try to put myself in your shoes, and I say, well, how in the world would I deal with the uncertainty of the situation, not knowing if you're ever going to be free again, let alone when you might be free, but also the ingenuity that seemed to come up in so many guys. You just hit on one point, the impromptu appendectomy there, but the guys I've talked to found all kinds of different ways to make things that I would have never thought of. Did you do anything like that?
Yeah. After the Russians liberated the prison camp, I built myself a little hut outside,
mm-hmm.
right outside, and I put straw in it to sleep on. I had slept on a wooden floor, and I was 6'1", weighed 145 pounds, and my hip bones were so sore from laying on that floor. But I'll tell you something that was kind of comical. Now, these guys are all young. Most of them are under 25 years old,
mm-hmm.
and they've been locked up, and they got to do something. And when the Russians came, they told us to knock down the fences and stuff. So I took a searchlight, and I built an oven, and I made a stove, and I put a smokestack on it to where I could cook stuff. And I that searchlight I made as an oven, and I could put a chicken in there and roast it. And the guys would come to me and they'd say, "Well, we want to roast our chicken." Okay, but I get the wings and the legs. That was my cut for using my stove. So I was eating pretty good.
Yes, he was. And when we come back, we're going to hear about the moment when Lou tasted something even sweeter. He tasted his freedom again. Hometown Heroes will be right back after this.